It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 51 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. At the airport, they are showing east winds at 7 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for today and tomorrow, with a 30% chance of showers this afternoon and tomorrow morning. High near 55 today, overnight low of 42, calm winds turning to the east to 5 today, and then becoming completely calm again tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak residents had a downtown block party last weekend. Joe Biden led a memorial for September 11th at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage yesterday. And the hoped-for repair of offshore fiber optic cable in northwest Alaska is still a work in progress. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says he is directing House committees to initiate a former impeachment inquiry into President Biden and the role he may have played in advancing his son Hunter's business interests. Here's NPR's Susan Davis.
House Republicans have already been investigating the president and his family's business dealings for months. They've yet to produce clear evidence of wrongdoing by President Biden, but McCarthy says the impeachment inquiry will focus on allegations of abuse of power, obstruction, and corruption. The announcement comes as McCarthy faces pressure from former President Trump and his party's right flank to advance the impeachment process against Biden ahead of the 2024 presidential election. At least one House Republican, Matt Gaetz of Florida, had publicly threatened to force a vote to remove McCarthy as Speaker if he did not move forward with an inquiry. Gaetz called McCarthy's announcement a baby step. Republicans James Comer of Kentucky and Jim Jordan of Ohio will take the lead on the investigation. Susan Davis, NPR News, the Capitol.
Images from the East Libyan city of Derna today show the stark, muddy remains of floodwaters that plowed through dams and engulfed entire neighborhoods. As many as 10,000 people reportedly are unaccounted for more than 36 hours after the storm struck. The region's health minister says more than 1,500 bodies have been recovered. Search and rescue operations are in their fourth day in Morocco, where sniffer dogs are being used to search for signs of life under collapsed buildings. The death toll from last Friday's earthquake is nearing 3,000. NPR's Lauren Freyer reports from a hard-hit village high in the Atlas Mountains near the epicenter.
Sniffer dogs from Spain and Sweden are scampering all over a mountain of rubble that used to be a village here. More than 50 people have died in this town of a few hundred. A 9-year-old girl is the last one still missing. Houses up here are made from soft red clay, which, unlike cement and rebar, simply crumbled in the quake. Aid convoys have only made it so far, beyond which donkeys are being used to ferry water and blankets up rocky paths. People are sleeping outdoors in their farmland as aftershocks rattle their tents. In some of the most remote areas, villagers expressed anger at the government for the pace of its response. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, in the village of Tinert in the Atlas Mountains of Morocco.
The former Soccer Federation chief under investigation for forcibly kissing a member of the women's team that recently won the World Cup is being ordered to appear in court this Friday. Here's Alan Tero Ruiz.
Luis Rubiales has been summoned to testify before Spain's national court in Madrid. The judge opened an investigation after prosecutors filed a criminal lawsuit, accusing Rubiales of sexual assault for kissing the player Jenny Hermoso on the lips.
That's Alan Ruiz Tero reporting. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak residents came together to celebrate the community last weekend, the second year the downtown block party has echoed around the waterfront with live music. KMXT's Brian Venois was there and has this report.
That's the Alutiiq dancers from the Shunack tribe. They were just one of the weekend's performers, and there were also nearly two dozen booths run by local nonprofits. The gathering was hosted by the Kodiak Community Foundation and the Kodiak Arts Council. It's the group's second downtown block party. Laura Arboleda is the board chair of the foundation. She says participation just about tripled this year.
Last year, we had about 10 local nonprofits sign up, and maybe 6 or 7 showed up. And this year, we had, including us and the Arts Council, about 20 to 22 nonprofits show up and participate in the downtown block party.
She says it's their way of celebrating not just the things Kodiak's known for, like fishing and bears, but also the people who live here.
We also have a very rich diversity and culture, and so to be able to show that off to our community is amazing.
Live performances included dances from Samoan American dancers, the Filipino American Association, music from the Kodiak Balalaika players, and even an all-Coast Guard band called Homebrew. Kids had the opportunity to play in a bouncy house, get their faces painted, or use ropes on sticks to blow gigantic bubbles. Arboleda grew up in Kodiak and says a lot of the events she loved have faded away. She says the initial idea behind the block party was to regrow a sense of community downtown.
When I was younger, I mean, I do remember walking downtown a lot. My cousin and I would just walk around down there, and our older cousin would babysit us, and she would make a scavenger hunt of, you know, what's downtown. And we would be able to walk down there and feel safe and feel okay.
She says she hopes holding events like the annual block party will help bring more foot traffic downtown and bring people together.
There have been efforts to try to make downtown a little more welcoming, a little more friendly. And we have some local restaurants down there, a little gift shop, and we have shops down there that we want to make sure we continue to support. And it's across from the harbor, and it's really beautiful. We have a beautiful downtown, and we just wanted to figure out ways to be able to utilize that.
The Kodiak Community Foundation is already planning to host another block party next year. In downtown Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
President Joe Biden led a memorial at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage yesterday on the anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. He described that day 22 years ago.
My fellow Americans, September 11th, 2001, tested our strength, our resolve, and our courage. The billowing smoke and ash that darkened the clear blue sky that September day. The shredded steel and concrete slabs that rained down from the World Trade Center. The plume of fire that shot up in the sky in Pentagon.
Biden stopped at J-Bear on his way back from the G20 summit in India and a diplomatic visit to Vietnam. He spoke for more than 15 minutes in a hangar filled with Alaska-based military members and their families, as well as more than a dozen politicians and policymakers, including Governor Mike Dunleavy, U.S. Congresswoman Mary Peltola, and Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson. The president said, though J-Bear was thousands of miles away from the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the distance, quote, did not dull or diminish the pain.
We know that on this day 22 years ago from this base, we're scrambled in high alert to escort planes through the airspace. Alaskan communities opened their doors to stranded passengers. American flags sold out in every store and were placed in front of seemingly every home.
Biden went on to decry terrorism, not only foreign, but domestic and ideological violence as well. He also used the remembrance to call for national unity.
That's how we truly honor those we lost on 9/11. By remembering what we can do together, to remember what destroyed, what we repaired, what was threatened, that we fortified, what was attacked, and an indomitable American spirit prevailed over all of it.
After his remarks, the president shook hands with audience members for nearly an hour before departing on Air Force One back to Washington, D.C. Western and Northern Alaska Internet users can expect to get credits for their deteriorated service from GCI a little while longer. The expected repair of the offshore fiber optic cable owned by Quintillion is still a work in progress. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello has the story.
Weather and visibility has been delaying repairs to an offshore fiber optic cable under the Beaufort Sea. Quintillion initially estimated it could restore broadband access by the end of August. According to the Quintillion Facebook page, the repair crew aboard the Integrity are still trying to retrieve the broken fiber optic cable. The post says, quote, they are using a variety of special equipment to dig through the hardened floor of the Beaufort Sea to reach the cable, which is buried below the ocean. The post also says that they have a dive team on standby once the crew has eyes on the cable. The good news is that one broken end of the cable that's connected to shore was recovered, tested, sealed, and secured on the seabed floor by the Quintillion repair crew. Once the repairs are complete, GCI spokesperson Heather Handyside says GCI is ready to restore services.
And though we'd like that to be immediate, it is going to take some time. We've put several strategies in place to help manage traffic in the interim without the Quintillion fiber. So we're going to have to kind of unwrap those processes and restore the original pathways to the Quintillion fiber to actually get that service back up and running.
Handyside says impacted customers will continue to receive credits on their bills, but not for long.
So until we get service fully back and running, even after Quintillion repairs the break, until our customers receive the same level of service that they had in the past, we will continue to give the 100% credit for internet service and in impacted communities in Nome and Kotzebue, 50% credit for wireless service.
And for folks in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta struggling with slow internet speeds?
There are a few communities in the lower Kuskokwim that are impacted, and those customers will receive it, but it really was folks just in the Bethel area, just because of the way our network works, that were impacted by the Quintillion fiber break for internet service.
Handyside says that GCI has had more than 100 people who've worked thousands of hours since the break to help restore service or improve service, and they are standing by ready to restore service as soon as the offshore cable is repaired. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
A Canadian-based mineral exploration company is one step closer to developing the Graphite Creek deposit. It's the nation's largest known graphite deposit and among the largest worldwide. Bering Strait's Native Corporation announced a $2 million investment earlier this month. As KNOM's Ava White reports, even though the project is still in the preliminary stages, Bering Strait's Native Corporation says they are prepared to invest more.
BSNC Board of Directors unanimously approved a motion earlier this month allocating $2 million for the preliminary exploration of the Graphite Creek deposit. The Graphite Creek deposit is located on state and private land just 37 miles north of Nome. According to their most recent press release, BSNC could invest an additional $8 million into the project in the future, bringing the total investment to over $10 million. Graphite One Creek is speculated to yield nearly 11 million tons of graphite material. That's roughly equivalent to over 164,000 Boeing 737 airplanes. A pre-feasibility study from 2022 showed a 24-year lifespan for the mine. Daniel Graham is the interim president and CEO of BSNC. He says the board is confident about the economic growth Graphite One will bring into the region.
While it's hard to quantify at this period in time in their project, we have been told by the leadership of Graphite One that they're very committed to growth in our region and of our people.
The investment agreement includes an advisory board composed of a BSNC board member and Graphite One members to share expertise and information with residents of the region. BSNC has not yet elected a board member for the Graphite One Advisory Board, according to Graham. The BSNC Advisory Board member will represent residents throughout the Bering Straits region.
So it will really be up to everyone on that board to voice their opinions and you know, be able to pass along what they're hearing from their constituency.
The advisory board committee will attend meetings with local residents and Graphite One officials this year. Residents of Western Alaska voiced their concerns about the project affecting their subsistence lifestyle in 2019. Despite their concerns, the project continued. Graham says subsistence was a concern for BSNC for the project's development that they spoke to Graphite One officials about in detail.
They have gone well out of their way to assure us that the footprint will be as small as possible, that the impact to the subsistence resources from our people will be minimized wherever possible. And they've also been really open to, things like workforce being able to leave their jobs and have their jobs when they come back after subsistence.
Anthony Huston, Graphite One's president and CEO, said in the statement on Tuesday that the company is looking forward to partnering with BSNC and is grateful and humbled by their support. The company began environmental and geotechnical studies and operating drill rigs this summer. Graphite mining has been inactive in the United States since the 1950s and has been import dependent since 2020. If the project is developed, Governor Mike Dunleavy says production from Graphite One will significantly reduce reliance on other nations for graphite. The investment builds on $37.5 million from the Department of Defense that was awarded in July.
For KNOM, I'm Ava White.
A rare double glacial dam release into the Kenai River is causing high water levels and flood risks on the Kenai Peninsula. KDLL's Riley Board has more.
Two Kenai Peninsula glaciers, Snow and Skeelot Glacier, are currently releasing large amounts of water, which are flowing downstream into the Kenai. The phenomenon is a glacial dam release, a hydrological event that begins when part of a glacier melts, leaving behind a seasonal lake where ice used to be.
And that is dammed up by the main glacier. Every couple of years, when that gets full, it releases. It is enough hydrostatic pressure that it can force its way underneath the glacier, and then it will all flow out within a few days.
Kyle Van Piersum is a forecaster at the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center in Anchorage. He says usually these two glacial lakes release every 2 or 3 years, but two at the same time is unprecedented.
Pretty rare that those two go in the same year, and even more rare that they go within a few days of each other.
He says it's also unexpected because the Snow Glacier Lake also released last year. He says there's no good explanation for why that's occurring. Van Piersum says the Snow Glacier Lake began releasing water Wednesday into the Snow River and down to Kenai Lake. Skeelot Glacier Lake started releasing on Thursday, sending water into Skeelot Lake and ultimately down the Kenai River. The low-lying Kenai Keys area in eastern Sterling is at the biggest risk for flooding.
They're already seeing some pretty high water in the Kenai Keys. Our observer there has been giving us observations saying that the canals and the keys are completely full and the roads are about to become inundated or overtopped by water.
A glacial dam release is the same event that caused major flooding and damage in Juneau in early August. But Van Piersum says the Juneau release was a thousand-year event. This double release on the Kenai may be unprecedented, but it's not expected to bring that level of destruction. Van Piersum says the peak threat will be Tuesday, but a warning remains in place through next Saturday. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
The Tetlin Native Corporation is contesting the validity of a 2008 mineral lease that enabled the development of the Manh Choh gold mine. Corporation researcher Loretta Smith says the mineral exploration and development lease agreed to by former Tetlin Village chief includes acreage wrongfully transferred from the village corporation to the Tetlin Tribal Council in 1996.
You can't transfer ANCSA land without the shareholders. The shareholders have to approve. Well, that was never done.
Smith says the corporation aims to halt the Manh Choh project.
For us to go back over this and see what you've done on our land. What do you owe us in direct expense? What do you owe in damages? And then from there, determine whether they want to continue doing business with them with a whole new lease.
Toronto-based Kinross is the majority partner in the Manh Choh or Peak Gold Project. Kinross Alaska External Affairs Supervisor Brianna Schottke confirms that the companies have a lease exclusively with the Tetlin Tribal Council.
Peak Gold has a mineral lease with Tetlin, and that gives Peak the right to explore for and develop mineral resources on Tetlin tribal lands. And Tetlin owns those in fee, and that mineral lease then grants Tetlin a net smelter royalty from all gold and silver produced, and that's with the Tetlin Tribal Council.
The Tetlin Native Corporation is seeking legal representation to pursue its lease case.
It's day one of the biggest antitrust trial in 25 years. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute. Government lawyers are going up against Google, alleging it rigged the market to become the dominant online search engine. Google argues there are plenty of alternatives available to consumers. Microsoft was the last big antitrust case in 1998. The Biden administration is considering changes to the visa program that grants migrant farm workers temporary entry to the U.S. The changes include identifying recruiters in foreign countries. They're intended to improve working conditions and combat human trafficking. Government scientists say this year has already set a record for the number of major weather disasters. 23 so far have cost $1 billion or more. I'm Novosapo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 12th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:33 and it will set again at 8:36, giving us 13 hours and 3 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 74 degrees, set in 2018. And our record low was 33, set in 1987, and then again in 1992. Currently a pleasant 51 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Out at the airport, they are showing 74% humidity. They have east winds to 7 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 30% chance of showers this afternoon, mainly after 5 p.m. Partly sunny skies, otherwise with a high near 55 and calm winds turning to the east to 5. For tonight, a 30% chance of showers mainly before 11, mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 42, east winds to 15. East winds to 5, becoming completely calm, rather. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies with a high near 54, light northeasterly winds increasing to 10 tomorrow afternoon. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 43, issued 10 a.m. September 11th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 12th until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 14th in the Inner Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, September 12th until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 14th in the following area: Karlik Lagoon Exit Channel Terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Outer Iqaluit, Outer Karlik, Sturgeon, Halibut Bay sections, Central and North Cape sections, Northeast Kodiak District, East Side Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, Olga Bay sections, Northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iqaluit Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay, Southwest of Fognak and Northeast of Fognak sections, and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest of Fognak section of the Fognak District, within 1/2 nautical miles of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Till further notice, within the Kodiak area, that portion of Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained in the purse seine fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak area salmon stat charts and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And as always, recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorded phone at 486-4559.
And Mariners, here is your Weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Southwest 15 today and tonight with 6-foot seas. For tomorrow, variable 10, becoming north 20 in the afternoon with seas to 5 feet. Northwest 25 tomorrow night with 6-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable winds to 10 knots for today and tonight in the Shelikof with seas to 3 feet. Northeast winds to 15 knots tomorrow with 4-foot seas. Looking at our local tides, we do have a high tide coming up at 2:06 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 7.1-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:33 of 2.5 feet this evening. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:29 this afternoon and be 12.1 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 8:17 p.m. of 3.1 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tonight, and they will be having a regular meeting on Thursday. Both meetings begin at 7:30 p.m. and will be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meetings are open to the public, and members are also encouraged to tune in to KMXT right here on 100.1 FM. The meetings will also be web streamed, and the links and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. Contact the City Clerk's office with any questions at 907-486-8636. Tomorrow, it's Elders Afternoon Game Time at the Kodiak Public Library. That begins at 1 p.m. at the library. Food, fun, and friends. Transportation is available for beneficiaries for Canada's Elder Services. Call 907-486-7352 to schedule a ride. But again, that's tomorrow. The Public Library, 1 p.m., Elders Afternoon Game Time. Events coming up with the Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak include tomorrow's film screening, Alive Inside. That's happening from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Stay for refreshments and a discussion about the film afterwards. Again, that's 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library tomorrow. On Thursday, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Friday, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Senior Center, they are holding free memory screenings. Call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181 to sign up. KMXT's annual meeting is coming right up. Join us here at KMXT for a potluck and open house on Friday. That open house starts at 5:30 p.m., and the meeting will be broadcast live on KMXT on 100.1 FM right here, starting at 6:06. So drop on by Friday at 5:30 p.m. We'll have food and fun. Meetings happening in the Kodiak Island Borough include tomorrow's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission. They will be having a work session at in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a special meeting. That's happening on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. This meeting was called by the mayor and will be held in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers. Early voting is available in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 710 Mill Bay Road from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. That starts September 18th, so it hasn't quite started yet and goes through October 2nd. If you have any questions about this, call the City Clerk's office at 907-486-8636. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is having a public information meeting about formerly used defense sites. The meeting here in Kodiak will be held in person at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center on Tuesday, September 26th, from 7 to 9 p.m. That's about public information on ongoing environmental investigation and cleanup activities at the Kodiak FUDs, or formerly used defense site properties.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.